it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is KC Sports Network, proudly presented by M-Prize Bank.
Pay heed all who enter and beware this podcast. That's right, this is the Pay Heed Podcast. I'm Nick Springer, alongside my good friend Kevin Flaherty, brought to you by M-Prize Bank. You'll remember in all things possible, member FDIC. And Kevin, evidently people should pay heed to what Bill Self is doing also in the spring transfer portal as spring Bill strikes again. This time getting Alabama transfer Rylan Griffin over the weekend to commit to Kansas. The Jayhawks now have four transfers in tow. Very impressive spring class for KU. As Griffin, a bit of a wing type, we're going to be breaking him down throughout this episode here. A really, really exciting player that I think Kansas fans should be thrilled that he is going to be wearing the Crimson and Blue coming up this fall.
Yeah, Bill Self is on the warpath. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, you look at his history at Kansas, you know, he has never gone 2 years without winning the Big 12, and that's just an absurd stat, and I think no matter who Kansas eventually gets to replace Bill Self when he retires, I think that's going to be one of the things that people are going to have to accept is life just doesn't happen that way typically in college basketball. But you look at the recent chances that he's had to respond, right? In 2019, they have the injury to Udoka Azubuike, wind up having a very promising season, sort of fall apart on him a little bit, still a top four seed, but not, you know, up to expectations. The very next year, they're the best team in college basketball, tracking as the number one overall seed when COVID hits. 2021, you know, you have sort of the wildness of the COVID season combined with, you know, a fairly young roster that's adjusting to the lack of Devon Dotson, the lack of, you know, Udoka Azubuike after he graduated this time. And they don't win the Big 12. Baylor wins the Big 12 and goes on to win the national title. The next year, Kansas wins the Big 12 and wins the national title. And so there isn't a whole lot. And of course, I mean, you could go back to, you know, the 2004 season not winning it and then winning it the next year. But I think, you know, the takeaway from that is that Bill Self is really good at adjusting. And as much as people say sometimes, well, he's hard-headed in that he wants to do this or he wants to do that, Bill Self's best teams have been very different. You know, you look at the 08 team compared to the 18 team, they're very different. You know, one was based around two big men and high-low and all those things. The 2018 team was four guys out, you know, shooting the ball. And then the team in 2022 was a team that really, you know, based off of the fact that four guys could go get the ball and start the break. And so they could get a defensive stop and turn it into offense really, really well. And my point in that is just that he's been able to adjust to his personnel. And even when he's had failings or things haven't gone his way, I think he's been able to sort of diagnose the problem, say, hey, here's where things went wrong. Obviously, last year, lack of scoring, lack of shooting at times, and then certainly a lack of depth with the way things played out. With the addition of Rylan Griffin, you know, another shooter, another scorer, more depth. You know, it feels like you're just checking all those boxes off, Nick.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Rylan Griffin, to your point, really does add in a lot of those areas, right? He was a high 30s three-point shooter for Alabama. Obviously, Alabama went to the Final Four last season, and he made some big shots in the NCAA tournament, which is great to see. He's a dynamic 2-3 type, could play different positions. Another great thing for Kansas is, you know, their team likes to switch on defense, and then on top of that, you can utilize different lineups. And so, yeah, I think, like I said, Kansas should be really, really excited about this player. He's a guy that KU, I know, recruited really hard in high school before he ended up at Alabama and really wanted him. So this was, I think, a situation where Bill Self was not going to miss a second time on a player like this that he felt like he really wanted to see play in Lawrence, which is very, very exciting. So, Kevin, when you think about just Rylan Griffin, the player, what maybe stands out to you the most about what he might bring to KU this upcoming season?
Well, I'll be honest with you, what doesn't necessarily stand out the most, but I think what I would be most excited about is the fact that the additions that Kansas has had, I think there have been some questions defensively. You know, you're adding shooters, you're adding scorers, these different things, but at some point you got to defend people, and Ryland Griffin is a guy that does both. And I think that while the headline, if you will, is, you know, shooter, scorer, and I like the fact that he scored 19 in the NCAA tournament in the Sweet 16 against North Carolina. And he did that on a night where he shot 1-for-4 from three. So he's not just a shooter. You know, it's not, hey, if this guy's three-point shot isn't falling, you're not getting a lot of value out of him. But I think the ability to switch defensively, the fact that he has shown some chops on that side of the ball, I think that makes him a really nice pickup too, because you aren't just getting a shooter. You're getting somebody that can rotate through, that can defend. Because at the end of the day, yes, they're adding a lot of offensive pieces, and they really did need to add more pop on the offensive end, but you still got to get stops. And I think that Ryland Griffin is a guy that is going to help them offensively while also, you know, being a two-way guy that can maybe help you get stops here and there as well.
Yeah, through all of the chaos, through all of the pandemonium of the transfer portal and what KU has added, they've added some guys that can score. A.J. Stewart. Guys that can shoot the three, Zeke Mayo. Guys with high NBA upside, Riley Kugel. And you throw that all in, and that's great, but you're also going to be losing a guy like Kevin McCuller, who was an anchor of the defense. And DeJuan Harris having to play more minutes negatively affected his defense. And I hope that won't happen this season, but you start to look around and you think, well, okay, Hunter Dickinson was generally actually a fairly highly rated defender, but there were other games where he really struggled in the post also. And then you start to look around and say, okay, well, who's going to be maybe your defensive stopper type player? Because when you have a guy like Kevin McCuller on your roster, that really does cover up a lot of other defensive issues you may be having when you have, you know, an elite defender like that. And I'm not saying that Ryland Griffin is the same level of defender as Kevin McCuller, but the point being that, kind of like what you said, this situation where Kansas has gone out, Bill Self said, he looked at the last season and said, okay, we were bad from the three-point line. We were bad in terms of getting buckets when we needed them. Let's go out and get guys like that. A.J. Storr, Zeke Mayo, boom, done, got it. Then you start to take a step back and say, okay, wait a minute. We need to make sure we can still play at the other end of the floor as well. And that's where Ryland Griffin comes in, because I do think he's a quality defender. Certainly the best defender I think KU has gotten out of the transfer portal when you look at the three guys they've added. And that's something that's not insignificant, because when you look around the state of college basketball, it's easy to fall in love with just the high-flying, high-scoring, you know, three-point shooting, all that stuff. But Bill Self, at the end of the day, is a guy that he likes to have his bread be buttered almost more the defensive end, I would say.
And oh, sure. So
getting a guy like this, I think, is certainly going to make him happy at both ends of the floor, in that he maybe has found somebody who can eliminate and take away an opposing team's top wing scorer, with DeJuan Harris, you know, staying at the guard position and also still add on the offensive end. So this is really kind of a win-win, and I'm sure Bill Self is pleased about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Storr can defend. I think Kugel has the potential to defend with the athleticism and the lateral movement and all the things that he has. But we haven't seen it as much. With Griffin, there's proof of concept there, right? It's not this guy could potentially be a good defender. It's this guy, you know, is a good defender. And so I think that certainly factors in. I think, you know, your points are very good. You know, KJ Adams, I think, is a plus defender at times. And I do think that if you surround Hunter Dickinson with the right kind of guys, and we'll get into Hunter Dickinson a little bit later, and I'll probably go a little bit more into this, but if you surround him with the right kind of guys, he can be part of a really good defense. That first Michigan team that he was on was a top 10 defense. And so you can have a really good defense with Hunter Dickinson as your big man, but you know you have to give him some help out there, and you have to maybe make a few other tweaks that I'm sure we'll talk about here in a little bit.
Griffin is listed at 6'5", so he's going to be slotting into that wing position, which was an area of need for Kansas, certainly with Kevin McCuller departing and with really Johnny Furphy departing. So now he slides in with A.J. Storr, with Zeke Mayo into that spot. And you feel pretty confident that he's going to be a guy that's going to be a solid contributor. So I think it's a really, really exciting addition. I think it's a guy that for a while Kansas has been pushing pretty hard for, and nice to see. You know, the other thing that's kind of stood out to me about this, Kevin, is we're sitting here, we're recording this on April 29th. You look back at last season, Kansas was much more slow with what they were doing in the transfer portal. And on one hand, I do wonder, the thing about the transfer portal is like, it's new for everybody, right? Everybody is kind of learning it at the same time, right? So whether you're Bill Self or whether you're a first-year head coach or somewhere else, you're kind of all learning the transfer portal at the same time and understanding what works and what doesn't. And I don't even know maybe if there is a rhyme or a reason to what works and what doesn't on the transfer portal. It just kind of varies. But you do look at last season and how KU handled things. And this season, they have approached it much more differently and they've been much more aggressive. Hunter Dickinson didn't commit to Kansas until May 4th. Right now, we're sitting here going into May and Kansas already has four commits. So there's clearly been a different emphasis for Kansas and the transfer portal this season in terms of the aggressiveness of who they're going after and pursuing the targets that they feel can add to KU.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You know, I heard a story about a major conference head coach and the assistants had to kind of tell him, we got to get started on this thing earlier, you know, maybe even before guys get into the portal and before everybody screams tampering. There are ways to get your interest across without technically tampering, you know, talking to the high school coach, talking to his trainer, whatever else, and just saying, you know, gee, you know, hope he's enjoying his time over there or whatever. But this, the point was, this coach was kind of starting late on these guys and they weren't getting, you know, their targets because they were starting off behind everybody else. And so there has been an adjustment period, I think, for a lot of people because it moves so quickly. I mean, there are literally guys that enter the transfer portal with do not disturb on their profile in the transfer portal. And what that means is basically, yes, I entered today, but I already know where I'm going. And so, you know, when it's going that quickly, I do think there was a little bit of an adjustment period for a lot of people to kind of decide like, hey, what's okay, what isn't, you know, what can we do? What are other people doing? You know, are we starting off behind in this thing? Like you said, Kansas a lot more accelerated in the process. I think with a guy like Ryland Griffin, it certainly helped that there was already that groundwork laid from not just recruiting him his first time through, but he visited, you know, as a high schooler and all of those things. And so you were already maybe starting up the track a little bit with him. And I think one of the things that's been proven to be true over the last, you know, 14, 15 years, you know, going all the way back to the Morris twins or Tyshawn Taylor, Xavier Henry, even Bill Self, when he's the second, when he's recruiting somebody for the second time or after somebody went somewhere else and now they're looking for a second home, you know, Self is really tough in those situations. He does a really good job of recruiting guys. And even when maybe they make decisions to, hey, I'm going to go somewhere else or whatever, he has done enough to leave himself sort of that open door in case something happens. And I think, you know, with Ryland Griffin specifically, you saw that come into play here where the relationships were built. There were no bridges burnt. And when Ryland Griffin decided to enter the transfer portal, you know, Kansas was a very easy sell with what they needed, with his playing style, and obviously they already loved him as a player.
Yeah, Bill Self normally does not miss a second time. So with Ryland Griffin in the fold, we will take a look at where he fits into this lineup coming up this fall on the other side. But first, got to tell you about our sponsors at Home Field Apparel. You can go to homefieldapparel.com. They've got over 40 different Kansas items, 120 different Kansas, or 120 different other schools you can check out besides Kansas. And we've got a promo code for you, KCSN23, 15% off your first order. I've got the Kansas Relays home field shirt with the sweet Warhawk if you're watching on YouTube.
Nice.
Kansas Relays were just last weekend, actually. So, you know, pretty cool stuff there. They've got this. They've got all kinds of other items covering you with football, basketball, and more. They've got a retro shooting shirt, which I'm intrigued by for sure. For KU. So you can check out all that and more at homefieldapparel.com with the promo code KCSN23 for 15% off your first order. More Ryland Griffin talk coming up next.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest-ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. kcsn.substack.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
This is the Pay Heed podcast here on Kansas City Sports Network. I'm Nick Springer with Kevin Flaherty. If you like what you're hearing or seeing, please hit that subscribe button and like and comment as well here on YouTube or on Apple, Spotify, wherever you are listening and or watching. We appreciate your support here of KU Athletics and of KCSN as well. So thanks so much if you're enjoying what you're hearing and seeing. Okay, back to this conversation with Ryland Griffin, Kevin. It's teased right before we went to break about this idea of where exactly he fits in. And you start to look at this Kansas roster. You go back to last season, obviously depth was the primary issue, where you had your starting five, and then you look to the bench and you're thinking, Marco Jackson's been up and down, Jamar McDowell, Parker Brown, so on and so forth. Well, now you start to look at this year's team for Kansas, and the discussion almost becomes more interesting about what is the starting lineup going to look like? Because you have DeJuan Harris, you have Hunter Dickinson, which we'll get into more coming up here in a little bit, and you have KJ Adams, who I think it's safe to assume those three are going to start. Well, now you've brought in AJ Storr, a guy who averaged over 16 points per game at Wisconsin, a versatile scorer. You've brought in Zeke Mayo, of course, the hometown kid from Lawrence High, who seems like he was slotted to the two guard. But now you have Ryland Griffin. So how does this impact KU's lineup, and what do you think maybe KU might try to do in the fall with these different pieces they've now added to their roster?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure what the starting lineup's going to look like, but I do think that the guys that they've got, you know, it gives them so much versatility, right? Because Zeke Mayo is a 1/2. So he can play alongside DeJuan Harris, or he can let DeJuan Harris sit for a bit and he can run the offense. You know, Ryland Griffin is a 2/3. Riley Kugel is a 2/3. And so they can either play that off-guard spot or they can slide to the 3 spot. I think AJ Storr is a 3/4. And so you can have a very different look with AJ Storr as your 4 as opposed to when you have KJ Adams out there. And KJ, you know, I think with Flory being back with Zach Clements and all the different things, you know, KJ is not necessarily going to be asked to play the 5, but he is a guy that has played both the 4 and the 5. And so you do have some versatility in terms of how you line up with different people. Do you need to be a little bit bigger on the wing? Do you need to be a little bit smaller because you're chasing somebody like Baylor around that, you know, is going to have a lot of speed and athleticism? And so they've got some decisions that they need to make. And I feel like people are going to be really focused on the starting lineup because it's just what all of us in basketball do. But at the same time, you look at like the 08 team, and Sherron Collins didn't start, but he finished. And so I wonder if it's going to be a somewhat similar situation this year where maybe Zeke Mayo starts the 2, maybe AJ Storr is at the 3, but maybe Ryland Griffin is a guy that slides in there somewhere and finishes as part of a a lineup that looks a little bit different.
Yeah, Bill Self, I want to be clear about something. Bill Self has said multiple times, even last season, that he thinks the media pays too much attention to the starting lineups and that it's more important about who is on the floor at the end of the game than it is at the start of the game. And at least, I mean, to a certain extent, he is right? I mean, it is more important who you've got out on the floor in a four-point game with 2 minutes left than it is necessarily who you've got out there when the ball is tipped at the start of the first half. So I understand his sentiment, but at the same time, you know, that is significant, right? When you think about players who are in the transfer portal, you know, they're looking for opportunities where they feel like they're going to play a lot of minutes. And I do think this will be a situation at Kansas where you're probably going to see guys play a lot of minutes off the bench. I mean, you look at last season, and man, if Parker Brown played 5 minutes off the bench, that was like, well, Parker Brown, like, playing so many minutes. Good Lord, 5 minutes? Jeez. You know, where old Marco Jackson, you know, in some games playing 8 minutes, it was like, that is a lot of minutes for old Marco. That's probably not going to be the case this year. And I think that's certainly for the better, right? Because we saw over the course of the season, yes, you can get away with playing 5-6 guys in a game. You think about the UConn game that Kansas won at Allen Fieldhouse. That was basically a 6-man rotation for KU. And in a one-off game in the regular season, I think you can get away with that. But over the course of the season, guys are going to get worn out. And look what ended up happening. You had Hunter Dickinson, who was dealing with multiple injuries, I think, really throughout the season. You have Kevin McCullough, who ends up going down with an injury. And if guys are playing, you know, 28, 29 minutes versus 34, 35 minutes, you're going to be in a much better shape to sort of limit those types of injuries and be healthier heading into the postseason as well. And I think that's probably what we're going to see here, right? I mean, I think we've talked about it, you know, with DeJuan Harris, his effectiveness, I think, really goes down pretty dramatically. 34, 35 minutes per game versus 30 minutes per game. So that's where Zeke Mayo comes in. Or maybe even if he's not starting, he's probably still going to be playing that, you know, that amount of minutes, you know, 20, 25 minutes, whatever. And same deal goes with Rylan Griffin and AJ Storr. I think it's going to be a much more fluid situation where, you know, you can bring in different guys and play different lineups, kind of like you said. And one thing that I thought was interesting was, we've never really seen Bill Self do this. You go back to the Texas game this past season, he did experiment with a sort of platoon style
machine,
and it worked in the Texas game. Now, we tried it again against Baylor on the road, and it did not work. You think about this team that Kansas has right now. I mean, what if it is something like that, where it's, hey, we want to pair AJ Storr with KJ Adams and Hunter Dickinson with, you know, and then Rylan Griffin will be out there with Zeke Mayo, and maybe that's when Riley Cool comes in as well, where you got more athletes on the floor, you know, with Hunter Dickinson. I don't know. Maybe that's something that you could try to dabble in. And the beauty of it is Kansas does have quite a bit of time to figure this out. And I think this kind of goes back to what we were mentioning earlier with the aggressiveness of Kansas, is that you're sitting here heading into May, and I think if you're Kansas, you feel much more secure about what your lineup is going to look like than you did at this time last year when you were still hunting Dickinson in the transfer portal, when you were still going after guys and looking for commitments in the transfer portal. So I don't know. Maybe that's kind of another added tidbit where you have a little bit more time now with what you feel like is a bit more of secureness in your lineup to start thinking already ahead about those things versus this time last year.
Yeah, and I think when you know, we're talking about all these new guys, we aren't talking about a guy like El Marco Jackson, you know, fighting for minutes. I think he's going to be better this year. You know, guys tend to improve, especially from their first year, their second year. He's a guy that, you know, I think just by playing with confidence, you know, he could take a major step forward. But at the same time, how effective could a guy like that, who's a really good athlete, be, you know, getting 10 minutes and being able to play at a really high energy level or whatever else, versus having to be out there for 25 minutes and your every mistake is kind of amplified or whatever else? And so I think that's a big part of it. You're in a spot now, too, where you can kind of watch Johnny Furphy and say, you know, hey, if he doesn't come back, you're not in really a bad spot. But if he does come back, you know, you're loaded and you can afford to wait on him, you know, because of the other guys there. I do think they're going to look to add somebody else still. But at the same time, I do think that they've really put themselves with sort of this flurry of activity in a spot where now they can be a little bit more reactive and a little bit more choosy with what they're doing, because they have filled a lot of those needs. They do have roster versatility. They do have more depth and all of those different things. And so I do think that it's something that when you when you look at this team and just a little peek behind the curtain, if you will, because I used to do the way too early rankings for 24/7. When you look at the way too early rankings, everybody always looks at their team and they're like, how can you have us that high? We don't have a full team, right? But when you're ranking for those, you're looking for just a couple pieces, right? You're looking for, hey, they bring back this really good point guard and this really good, you know, wing. They're going to add those pieces around it. It's not a complete picture, hence the way too early rankings. And so...
Wait, anyway, you're telling me the way too early rankings aren't, like, official? They don't matter? What?
No. Although it is kind of funny. One year, we hit, I did, like, I don't know, somewhere around 30 teams because we did, like, whatever year that was, and then we did, like, another 10 teams to watch. And we wound up hitting 14 of the Sweet 16 teams were in those 30 teams. So you can tell, you know, in terms of, hey, this team's going to be really talented or whatever else. You can also whiff huge because you get a decision that you don't expect. And, you know, last year we were higher than everybody else on Duke because we had gotten intel that Kyle Filipowski was going to come back. And so we had Duke higher in our rankings. We had also heard that Kobe Brown from Missouri was going to come back, and he didn't come back. We had him. We had Missouri, which looks just awful now, you know, in our way too early rankings. They don't win a single SEC game because of the way that the things worked out. And so, yeah, you're going to hit on some. You're going to miss on some for sure. But I do think that when people look at it and they're like, how is KU number one? And you can look at it and say Kansas is more complete right now than most of these other teams are kind of where, you know, where Kansas was at last year at this point. Houston's an exception, you know, bringing back four starters, getting Milos Uzon, you know, in there and you know, maybe a team here or a team there. Baylor is still looking to maybe add a center, you know, and they're a fairly highly ranked team, but most of these rosters are not complete. Look at UConn. A lot of people have UConn as a top 10 team right now. UConn's roster would not say top 10 team. It's more of a, they've got a couple nice pieces, and Dan Hurley, we trust, UConn's in the top 10. And so I do think that that's where this kind of sets you up at, is right now, at this point, Kansas has a more complete team than just about anybody in the country. And that's why Kansas is tracking, you know, number one, number two, and all these way too early rankings.
One of the frustrating things about that, though, Kevin, is that you look at number one teams preseason historically. Normally, for number one, you end up being pretty good, with the exception of Kansas. Kansas, when they've been preseason number one, they have struggled. You look at this season, I think it was, there's another season where KU was preseason number one. It might have been 2014, maybe, where they were preseason number one and struggled, obviously. There's been a couple of years over the past, and when you look historically at other teams that are preseason number one, besides North Carolina when they missed the tournament.
Yeah, that was
generally, if you're the number one team preseason, you end up being good. So, I know for Kansas fans, they might look at that and say, gosh, you know, I don't want to be number one. Generally, you do. And generally, that's a good thing. But I guess we'll see how that plays out going forward. So when you look at what Ryland Griffin now is on this team and sort of what that means for Kansas, what do you think, Kevin, that means maybe for everybody else on this roster? When you start to look at, you mentioned a guy like Marco Jackson, a guy like Jamar McDowell, even, you know, other possible players, you know, what Johnny Furphy, he comes back. How do you think that affects maybe some of the other guys on this team?
Yeah, like I said, I do think a positive is that he can take minutes at the two and the three. So, you know, you could maybe spread those out a little bit. It does. The person I would say it probably impacts the most is Riley Kugel, right? Because he's the other kind of 2-3 on that roster. I think there's a lot that's appealing about Kansas going back to sort of a 2-point guard look like they've had with, you know, so many of their really good teams, whether it was Russell Robinson / Sharon Collins and Mario Chalmers, whether it was Sharon Collins and Tyshawn Taylor, Frank Mason and Devontae Graham. You know, you could go sort of up and down the line, but I think there's something appealing about having Zeke Mayo next to DeJuan Harris, where not only is Zeke Mayo a tremendous shooter and a really good pull-up shooter, you know, which I think really helps them out a lot, but he can not only help DeJuan in terms of DeJuan sitting a little bit more, but he can take some of the ball handling burden off of him when he's on the court too. You know, he can bring the ball up, he can get the team into its offense. And so I do think that there's a lot of value to Zeke stealing minutes at the two. You put Ryland Griffin in there as well. You have AJ Storr getting at least a portion of his minutes at the three, if not majority of his minutes at the three. And now you're kind of getting to Riley Kugel a little bit where, you know, the players are going to decide this. You know, coaches love to say that players decide their playing time. You know, if Riley Kugel is better than Ryland Griffin, then Riley Kugel is going to play. But I think if you're asking me who this impacts the most, I think Ryland Griffin is the guy where maybe they're different players, so I'm not necessarily saying that, but there is a little bit of redundancy in terms of minutes there, maybe a little bit, where they're kind of eating out of each other's pools.
Well, the other big news over the weekend for Kansas and how it affects this roster, we've kind of touched on it a little bit here and there, that is one Hunter Dickinson. And, yeah. And the only way that Hunter Dickinson knows how, by the way, announcing that he's coming back, with Bill Self tweeting at him saying, hey, what are you doing? And then Dickinson responding to that tweet and saying, yeah, I guess I should probably say something. Oh, by the way, I'm coming back. So the only way Hunter Dickinson knows how, he announces that he's coming back. And this is a player, Kevin, that within the Kansas fan base throughout the season at times was a bit polarizing, even though he put up big numbers for KU. But obviously, you know, I could sense a second team All-American. I think you happily welcome back with open arms if you're Kansas. But with him back, what do you think that means now for kind of what we've been talking about, everything else with sort of the guards and wings that KU has? And you throw in Hunter Dickinson, how do you think that sort of sets this roster up?
Yeah, quite frankly, if he didn't come back, you know, Kansas wouldn't be getting love as a national title contender. You know, I mean, I hate to put it so cut and dry, and that's nothing against, you know, Zach Clements or Lori Badunga, but I do think if Kansas had known he wasn't coming back, you know, maybe they would have been in play for some of the bigger, you know, centers out there on the transfer portal, whether it was Cliff Omoruyi, who I think they kicked the tires on a little bit just in case Hunter Dickinson didn't come back. But Bill Self loves having a guy that he can throw the ball into it and expect 2 points. And you saw that on the national title team with David McCormick having the final four in national championship game that he did. With all the other players on that roster, you had multiple first rounders. You had Remy Martin, who had scored about 8,000 college points to that point. And the two biggest buckets of the season come from David McCormick down the stretch. And so there's a lot of value to Self being able to have a guy that can score like that. And I think Dickinson was polarizing, I think, for a few different reasons, one of which, you know, he's a guy that can shoot from the outside. He shot over 40% from three, you know, the previous year at Michigan. And he started off the year, you know, really, really well. You look at that UConn game, his ability to bring Donovan Klingon away from the basket was a big part of Kansas's success in that game. And then he went through that stretch where he just did not make anything. And you know, it's funny because you hear DeJuan Harris catch a lot of strays in terms of not being able to stretch the defense or not being willing, I guess, it more in that case. You hear KJ Adams catches a lot of heat for that same thing. KJ Adams and Hunter Dickinson can play together if Hunter is shooting the ball consistently from the outside. And I'm not saying you want him hanging out at the 3-point line, but when he goes out, KJ can go in and attack guys that aren't used to dealing with a guy of his strength and his athleticism down low. And you saw KJ play really well against UConn in that same game where he was stretching things out. I think the other thing that merits watching is Kansas attempted to hedge a lot with Hunter Dickinson defensively. You know, he came out high. He tried to rally back. He didn't really have the foot speed for it. And there were games where it didn't burn Kansas. And in Kansas, over the course of the entire season, the defense wasn't bad. Like when you look at the efficiency levels, but you look in March, they played, I think, 6 games in March. And Kansas was, I think, 98th in adjusted defensive efficiency, according to Bart Torvik. And you watch that Gonzaga game in particular, and obviously that throws those numbers a little bit. And some people will say, well, they just shot lights out. And it's true, but most of those were warm-up jumpers. You know, that Gonzaga was getting the ball where they wanted to get. They were getting in-rhythm shots. Maybe you don't expect them to hit that many of them, but they're still, you know, the offense was executing at an incredibly high level. And so I think one of the decisions that Bill Self and Hunter Dickinson may have to make, and I'm not trying to put a damper on all of this, is they may need to decide, hey, what's more important here? You know, is it, you know, him high hedging and trying to have a scramble drill behind it and things like that, because you can do some nice things that way? Or is it, hey, we're going to have him defend the same way he defended his first year at Michigan when they were so successful, and the same way that they defended with David McCormick, where, you know, you're going to play more drop. You're going to make sure that your 7 foot one guy stays in and around the paint where he can challenge shots. And so I think I personally, and I'm not a basketball expert, I'll be the first to say that, I think I personally think that the defense could take a major step forward if they decided to play more drop and have him play around the basket more and you know, less around the perimeter and hedging and doing things like that. Now, you know, Hunter could put in a huge offseason with the, you know, in the strength and conditioning program, you know, come back with better foot speed and change my mind. But as it sits from where we saw him this year, I think that's something that they're going to at least have a conversation about.
Yeah, and I think what you touched on at the beginning with his three-point shooting and him stretching the floor, it's funny because you go back to December-ish, and Hunter Dickinson was shooting like 60% from three.
Yeah.
And Bill Self actually had a comment of basically saying, hey, well, you know, he's going to come back down to earth at some point. Well, not only did he come back down to earth, Kevin, he went straight to the earth's core. I mean, the dude was just couldn't hit anything. And so that was a really, really unfortunate thing that happened for KU, because like you mentioned, the result was, you look at like the Missouri game where Missouri was like, okay, we're just going to triple team Hunter Dickinson and he's not going to be able to do anything. And who cares about KJ Adams, whatever. And there was no ability for him to stretch it out either. So it's a funny thing that how that worked to the kind of the season with him shooting the three. And now you look at this year's team and it could be a situation where if AJ Storr is playing at your four, I mean, Hunter Dickinson doesn't have to be a 3-point shooter, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's something where he can be, but it's not something you're relying on. Whereas I do think it got to a point last season where Kansas was somewhat relying on Hunter Dickinson to be a perimeter threat.
Sure.
And he can be a perimeter threat, and he has shown that in the past, but I don't know if it's necessarily something where you want to sit there and say, we're going to rely on him to be a perimeter threat.
I think that's fair. And I think one of the things from them being able to space the court out better too, I think obviously it helps Hunter Dickinson on the inside because everybody's not sitting in the paint. You know who else it really helps is DeJuan Harris. And I think, you know, I think there's a little bit of a misconception maybe on what DeJuan Harris is and isn't. You know, he's not a bad basketball player. And you know, he catches a lot of strays online for not being good. And I think, you know, he's a guy that fits a very specific, you know, system with in terms of the guys around him and how he can thrive and how his bread can be buttered. And I think that when you drive into the lane and you aren't necessarily super confident about your ability to attack the rim because the lane is crowded, but it's also maybe not the easiest to see passes out and passes around guys when there are 85 guys in the lane too. And so I really think that DeJuan Harris is somebody that people could remember, I think, how good DeJuan Harris can be if this team spaces the court well around him, because he is a good basketball player. And you look at the team that won the national championship, Remy Martin gets all the flowers and he hits so many great shots, but Kansas was down, what was it, 15 at halftime?
15.
16 overall, 15 at halftime.
Yep.
DeJuan Harris was on the court for the entire comeback. Like when he checked out, they were up three. And Bill Self, when he was speaking to high school coaches down, I think, in Houston that summer, one of the things that he said to him was, he said, it was one of the most dominant performances for somebody without scoring that I've ever seen. And so Remy hit the shots to keep it at three and to keep them in that spot. And absolutely, They would have lost that game without Remy's shots. But let's not forget, it went from 15 to Kansas up 3 with DeJuan Harris on the court, and DeJuan Harris really controlling the game defensively. And to your point earlier about DeJuan being more effective, you know, in that 28 to 30 minute mark potentially as opposed to 35 plus, I think that's where you would see maybe the biggest jump in him from a minute standpoint is his defense. I think that he's somebody that could be Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. Last year, he wasn't that guy for a lot of the season, and I think there were multiple reasons. One, you could say fatigue. He was out on the court a lot. But I think the other part of it was if he got into foul trouble, Kansas was in major trouble. And so there is something to that where you say, I could go for the steal, but I can't risk picking up a foul here. And so I think that's another area where DeJuan Harris could maybe find more success with this year's team is if you get in foul trouble, not that it's ideal, but you got Zeke Mayo, you've got another year of El Marco Jackson after going through the offseason. There are more options there than what he had last year, where when you look at like the Samford game, when he had got into foul trouble, you know, everybody kind of white knuckled their desk a little bit and said, okay, here we go. Can you survive this period? And so I do think that's something where DeJuan could come out ahead too, is just by playing more minutes and seeing that allow him to ramp up the defensive intensity again.
To just kind of put a bow on all this, the transfer portal window in terms of guys to enter closes this week. So for Kansas, you feel pretty good about who you've got in the fold. I think with the decommitment of LeBaron Filon, who was a player committed to KU, maybe kind of signaled to me that Marco Jackson is probably going to go ahead and come back. So he's probably going to be in there as kind of your third guard. You wonder if KU might try to add any more. You look at their scholarship numbers. There's been a lot of debate back and forth about this, about, well, you have to give up one more because of the IRP stuff over the next 2 years. And I was kind of the impression that KU was going to look to just get it out of the way as quickly as possible, just take care of it this year. Then Bill Self at the end of season banquet a couple weeks ago alluded to the possibility of it being 13th. So I guess we'll see what KU wants to do with that. I almost wonder to a certain extent, Kevin, if it's not a situation where Kansas says, we're going to recruit to 13, and if we end up with 12, so be it. And maybe it's a situation also where they say, hey, we'll have 12, and then if Furphy comes back, there's your 13th.
I think those are your two scenarios, really. And I think, you know, when you – it's probably something that you get a feel for, like, hey, is Furphy, you know, leading toward coming back or whatever. I would add that Bill Self tends to get those guys back, you know, when he needs somebody to come back, whether it's Doak, you know, Ochai Agbaji, Jalen Wilson, you know, Kevin McCuller, those guys tend to decide at the 11th hour to come back. It is a little bit different with Furphy because you don't have NIL for him. You can't just say, you know, hey, this is the deal. You're going to make this much in NIL or whatever else with him being an international player. But I do think, you know, it's tough to tell in college basketball where you're going to be 2 years from now. You just, even if you have a guy that plays really well and you think is going to come back, he may hit the portal. And so with all of that in mind, I think you aim for 13 this year just because you say, okay, this is potentially a national title year. You know, let's not leave bullets still in the gun. Let's go ahead and go out there and find, you know, a full roster where we can look at the end of the season. And if you fall short, you fall short, but you don't want to look at it and say, okay, you fell short because you didn't use a scholarship and you wound up needing that player, you know, for something, even if it's something relatively small along the way. And so I tend to think you aim for 13 this year, not knowing what next year is going to look like. But like you said, aiming for 13 could very well mean take your 12 and sit on Furphy for that 13th scholarship. And if he comes, fantastic. If he doesn't, you just gave up your scholarship and you'll be full the next year. So, you know, that's a pretty good way to look at it, I think.
Yeah, and I think, well, that's a great point that you mentioned about sort of not leaving any bullets left in the gun, because this will be Hunter Dickens' last year. This will be, yep, DeJuan Harris's last year. So you do feel like you have a couple of really strong cornerstone pieces along with like a KJ Adams, to where now you've added AJ Storr, Rylan Griffin, Zeke Mayo. And, you know, if it's one more guy that pushes you over the top, go for it, right? Go for it, because it'll be last year with Hunter Dickinson and DeJuan Harris. So,
yep, that's I 100% agree. And you don't know which of the new guys will stick around another year. You don't know which of the other guys will stick around for another year. Like you may get a third year of El Marco Jackson, you may not. And so I think knowing what you have this year, you know, Zeke Mayo's in his final year, I think, too. So.
Well, he might have two. He might have another year left.
Okay.
I don't know. We're right on the fringe of like that COVID year where it's like,
yeah,
it's really tough to tell.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I think it's one of those things that, you know, the bird in hand is worth two in the bush. You know what you're getting this year. You know that you're going to be a national title contender with the pieces that you have. And so you might as well take that swing.
And you know what you'll always be getting with the Pay Heed podcast with myself and Kevin Flaherty, which is great conversation covering all things KU athletics. Great episode here with Ryland Griffin. I want to make a quick note for KU baseball, just real quick at the end here, Kevin. We won 10 of 11, and they are sneaky pushing for a possibility of making the NCAA tournament. So that's something to keep an eye on as well. But you always get great discussion here on the Pay Heed podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to, or if you watch on YouTube, thank you. Be sure to hit the like and subscribe button as well. Leave a comment. Also, for myself and Kevin, if you think we sucked, you can say we sucked. If you think we were good, you can say we were good. Either one's fine with me. We'll keep doing our thing here on the Pay Heed podcast. But we'll be back. Thanks so much to Emprise Bank, our sponsor, as well as Homefield Apparel. This has been the Pay Heed podcast with Kevin Flaherty. I'm Nick Springer. We will talk to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to KC Sports Network. We appreciate your support. Don't forget to hit that follow button and leave us a review if you like what you heard. You can find all six of our channels covering the Chiefs, Royals, Sporting KC, and the KC Current, plus KU, K-State, or Mizzou by searching KCSN wherever you listen to podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Entertain. Educate. Inform. KC Sports Network.
The headlines remind us daily, the world is a dangerous place. The elites in charge say everything's fine, stop noticing. But you know better. And your gut knows that time is short to prepare for a world that is four missed meals away from chaos. My Patriot Supply has helped over 3 million families become more self-reliant and is the company Americans trust to prepare. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contain delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Secure at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200, plus get free shipping on all their Ready Hour 3-month emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. My Patriot Supply also has solar power generators, water filtration units, biomass stoves, heirloom seeds, and critical survival gear. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.